The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 96.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi, guys. Welcome to today's live stream Q&A. I'm super excited. We got a lot to talk about. First announcement, guys. Rebel Capitalist Pro is live. Yes, it's awesome. I've been in the forum myself all weekend. We've got archive issues of reports from Lynn Alden, from Chris McIntosh. We've got the live Q&As that we're doing. Our first live stream Q&A with Lynn Alden is this Tuesday night. The forum is just going crazy. It's awesome. It's just such a cool group of people. And so if you guys are interested, Sebastian's got the link for Rebel Capitalist Pro right there at the bottom of the screen, georgegammon.com/pro. So if you're interested, check that out after the live stream. Okay, so the first super chat here from RM. Thank you, my friend. He says, "Hi, George. Love your Rebel Capitalist Pro idea. What plays in food industry do you like to protect against price increases? Also, any specific farms in Colombia?" Well, you're just, I don't look at things that way, RM. I don't try to, and I'm not saying this is I'm right or wrong. I mean, by any stretch, obviously I'm just an amateur. I've almost flunked out of high school. So I'm not sitting here saying I'm right, do this. Everyone else is stupid and wrong and they don't know what they're talking about. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is the way I do things and the way I've been successful with investing since I retired in 2012 is not by trying to figure out what's the next best thing and kind of where the, where the money is going to be spent in the future. Well, that's great. I think that that's good if you can do that. But I've had a lot more success at looking at just what it is today. And what it is today, if you can get that at a discounted price based on today's financials, based on today's profit and loss, on today's balance sheet, if you can get that dollar for 50 cents, that's what I like. If I'm having to pay a dollar for a dollar, or even worse, if I'm having to pay $3 for a dollar, just because I think that dollar is going to go to $5 in the future because food prices will go up, or because we're going to go to autonomous driving, or because even with you guys know that I bought some oil companies back in March, but I wasn't buying them because I thought that the demand for oil was going to be huge. And oh my gosh, with all these emerging markets opening up, the demand for oil or coal or anything like that. No, I just bought it because it was cheap for what it was today, for that day, for the demand that we had right then and there. The companies themselves, looking at the balance sheet, I know their earnings are going to dip down and whatnot, but just they were cheap. So that's where I like to start. And I think I've got a little bit of an edge because before I retired, I was in the world of buying and selling businesses. And I was definitely in the world of getting pitched businesses constantly. Because as soon as people around you, especially back then, I was, and we're talking about when I was like in my mid 30s, like 35 years old. So, you're kind of in a social group there and everybody's pitching you ideas. Oh my gosh, invest in this nightclub and this restaurant and this new technology and this AV company and this blah, 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 blah. So it's just, you learn real quick that if you invest all these things, you're going to go broke super fast. So, and the same thing with businesses. I had a business broker back then, and he'd present opportunities, and it's always the same thing. You got some business that's not making any money, or maybe they're making $100,000 a year, and they're asking $2 million. You're saying, how? Well, on these pro forma earnings, if you look at our pro forma, P&L or whatever, you see that next year we'll be making 200, and the next year after that we'll be making 500, and the next year after that we'll be making 5 million. So based on our pro forma and what we're going to be in 5 years, then, oh my gosh, this $2 or $3 million price tag is a bargain right now. I'd say, okay, great. But we're not in 5 years from now. We're in today. And today you're making $100,000 a year. So the most I'd be willing to pay for your business is $400,000. I'm not paying you $2 or $3 million. Get out of here. I don't care how great your technology is. Now, did I miss out on some opportunities? Absolutely. I'm sure I did, but I don't care. I'm not the type of person that if I would have passed on an opportunity and that opportunity blew up, it was the next Amazon or the next Apple, I'm going to sit there and beat myself up over it. I should have done that. Oh man, George, why did you not invest in that company? The way I am, I'd be like, I did the right thing because I stayed in my lane and I did what I made the proper decision at the time. And I stayed within my strategy. And I know that if I stay within my strategy over the long run, I'm going to make money. I'm gonna do well. I'm gonna be successful as an investor if I stick with my strategy, because I've got an edge. And mathematically, if you set your portfolio up like this, you're going to do well over the long run. Am I gonna miss Amazons and Teslas and Nikola? Sure, but I don't care, because if I keep chasing the Teslas and the Amazons and the Apples, I know where that leads for me. I'm gonna go bust, and that's just the bottom line. So anyway, off on that tangent. Let's see, any specific farms in Colombia? I haven't looked into farms in Colombia. I looked at a few when I was in Ecuador, which were very interesting. In fact, one that was really, really caught my eye, and I was thinking about putting an offer on it. It was near the coast where I was, where I actually purchased property, and they grew some flower, I can't remember what it was, but it was like 100-acre farm, and they only used like an acre or two to grow these flowers. And they did the flower, then they'd take them into Guayaquil and to Quito, the two major cities there, and they'd sell them to local florists. And the guy was making like $50,000 a year, just selling these flowers. And it wasn't the owner. It was just some farmer guy that he hired to manage. So it was almost as passive as you can get. And he was asking like $250,000 or something like that for, you know, $50,000 a year in cash flow. And he's only utilizing just this little teeny part. And so I was going to maybe go in there and offer him 150, see if I could get him down. I ended up going a different direction. But the point is that's I haven't looked in Colombia. Now, I know there's some fantastic opportunities in Colombia for farms and within South America. I know Simon Black has done extremely well. He's the guy at sovereignman.com. He's done very well in Chile with I think blueberries and almonds and some kind of unique things of that nature. But definitely a huge opportunity. And if you're into that type of thing, I'd check it out for sure. So, okay, next question. Jay Kerr, thank you for the super chat. Chomping at the bit for Patrick Serezna part 2. Yeah, practical, push this button, long volatility. Well, I don't know if it's going to be just that easy, but yeah, we're going to walk through it live most likely, Jay. When is it planned? Similar for future commodities play? So what we're doing on Tuesday is last Tuesday, Patrick and I did the educational video where we started going into the going long volatility to build your own dragon portfolio. This Tuesday is going to be going commodity trend following. And then most likely Friday is when we're going to do the live session with Patrick, where we can go on there and just watch him actually do it in real time. We're going back and forth. The last time we did this, we charged, I think, like $97 when we did the options thing. This was about 2 months ago or so. I think this time we'll probably do the same thing, but I'm I'm trying to work it out with them where we give access to Rebel Capital as pro members free of charge. So probably, I don't want to say for sure, but it's probably going to work out that way. I got another question from Jay. Thank you. Where are you spending all the money on the super chats? Go join Rebel Capitalist Pro, for heaven's sakes. Okay. Rebel Capitalist Pro is a bargain. Thank you, Jay. Thanks for saying that. You've been so generous with your time. George, Lynn Alden. Yeah. Is very good. She is. My goodness. If you haven't really dove into Lynn's content, boy, oh boy, you got to do that. She is just a rock star. I mean, she's going to be, I was going to say she's going to be the next so-and-so, but I think she's going to take it to a whole new level. I mean, the next Raoul Paul, the next Grant Williams, the next Peter Schiff, the next Mike Malone, you know, whatever you want to plug in there. I think she's going to exceed that. You know, the next Danielle DiMartino, I think she's going to, she's just a rock star, and we're just very, very fortunate to have her a part of the Rebel Capitalist Pro team. So gifted, but is there a practical buy this stock now advice? So Jay, I don't know if it sounds like you're a member already, but with Lynn's premium research, which we have in Rebel Capitalist Pro, she discloses her own personal portfolio. So, and I haven't really even talked about that. Not only does she say, give you stock advice, which again, guys, to be clear, I do, if you're thinking about signing up for Rebel Capitalist Pro just to get stock advice, don't waste your time, because that's not why you subscribe to a newsletter or any newsletter. I don't care what it is. It's not to delegate your thinking to someone else. It's to make you a better thinker. And to open your eyes to different opportunities, but then to have you do the thinking. If you're one of these people that just wants Jim Cramer and just brain dead, where you just turn on CNBC and he says buy, and you just go okay, and go over to your Interactive Broker account or your Robinhood account more likely, and just buy that. Listen. You're asking for problems. You just don't do it. Don't do it. You're wasting your time and money if that's what you want. So my point is, yes, she gives stock advice, but it's, I wouldn't just go out there and buy her portfolio. I'd look at her portfolio personally, and I would say, okay, why is she buying this? Like, why did she buy that? Let me try to figure that out. Let me go back through her research. Let me get on a live stream with Lynn and figure out why she bought that. Why she bought that. It may make sense to you. You'd be like, yeah, I don't know. I don't agree with that. I've done my own homework, and I've educated myself to where I'm competent enough to have my own opinion. And I like this thing she did, but I don't really care for that thing she did. So you're not delegating your thinking to Lynn. You're making yourself a better thinker. I think that's my point. But again, she discloses her own personal portfolio. So that is really, really cool. Does she ever manage invest? No, she doesn't. Not right now. Chris does. Chris is a practicing hedge fund manager. I mean, he manages a lot of people's money, and he manages quite a bit, a significant amount of money, which is great, because you're getting, you know, the research you get with Chris is the research he's doing for himself to manage his hedge fund. So that's really cool. But no, she doesn't, not that I know of right now. Okay. Next question. What do you think about subleasing? What do I think about subleasing? I'm not sure, Kiana, where you're going with that. Subleasing. I mean, there's so many different ways to sublease. I don't know if you're talking about subleasing a commercial space for your business. I don't know if you're talking about maybe like an Airbnb play where you kind of lease and then you sublease it at a higher price because you're reducing the time frame. Not quite sure where you're going with that. Maybe you can clarify a little bit in the chat stream. I will tell you one thing. If you are going in the direction of kind of like an Airbnb real estate play, and I don't know if I've ever told you guys this story, but it's fascinating. The gentleman who purchased the very first flip property, the very first remodel I did in Columbia. This was a massive penthouse, almost 6,000 square feet. And that was my first project in Columbia, my first real estate project. So this is a gringo guy. He purchased it. His wife was a Colombian. He's in his mid-30s, something like that. Real bright guy, sharp, 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 super ambitious. And what he did back a few years ago is he would lease apartments in New York. And then, you know, he'd lease them out for a year or two at, let's say, $3,000 a month. And then he'd rent them nightly on Airbnb for $400 or $500 a night. Of course, that's illegal. and he got kind of, they kind of shut him down, I guess was the gist of the story. I don't know the whole story. It's just from me going out to dinner with him and his wife prior to us closing the deal. But so he said, screw it. It's a great business, but I'm going to go do it somewhere else. So he came down to Columbia, bottom line, and he went to Cartagena, which is right on the coast. And they're all a lot of old money in Cartagena. So these mansions, like these 10,000 square foot mansions on the coast and right close to the city, close to Old Town there. And they weren't being used, old money. People really couldn't rent them out. I mean, who wants to rent, you know, a 10 bedroom mansion or whatever? So he would go to the people and say, listen, I'll rent this 10 bedroom mansion for you from you for $4,000 a month, US. And I'll lease it for 10 years. 10 years. And so they'd say, okay, well, you know, I don't know you. You're just this random gringo. He said, listen, in addition to that, I will take $100,000 of my own money. It could have been 50 or so. But he said, I'll take my own money and I'll remodel your entire mansion. But you still own the mansion. So the worst case scenario is I don't pay you the $4,000. You basically evict me, which is easy to do in Columbia, and you get a $100,000 remodel for free. Okay, no brainer. So then what he would do, exact same thing, is he would take the mansion, remodel it, and then he would rent it out on Airbnb for $1,000 a night. And now that number is accurate. I remember it very well. So he's paying, and I asked him, I said, you know, what was your occupancy rate? He said, it just blew up because you got all these, you know, bachelor parties and all these big groups of people coming down from Miami. They want to hang out in Cartagena. They want to do the salsa dancing. They want to spend some time in Colombia, and the whole family or the whole party of people could be in one place. And you got jacuzzi, you got this pool, you're right on the ocean, you've got this Pablo Escobar mansion or whatever. You know, everyone's loving it and taking pictures. And if you got 10 people divided, that's only $100 a night. It's less than you'd have to pay for a hotel room, and you can all be in the same spot. You got a kitchen, you got a gal cooking you food, you've got a chauffeur. I mean, it's money. So I said, you know, what was your occupancy here? He said, at least 90% right out of the gate. So just figure you're pulling down $25,000 a month and you've got a $4,000 lease and you've got a little bit of expenses with a maid and a cook and a chauffeur, but that's peanuts in Columbia. So he's netting like $20,000 a month. So what does he do? He does it over and over and over and over and over again to where he had, you know, when I talked to him, he had 80 doors. Now that included a hotel that he did the exact same thing with. But think about that. He's got very little money out of pocket, but he controls the real estate asset. And then he's, you know, subleasing it out basically to people for a lesser period of time, which increases the amount of money you can charge. And I don't know about his hotel, but he had probably 10 of these mansions at the time that I spoke with him. So think about that. If he's making $20,000 a month per mansion, he's making $200,000 a month. And he doesn't have to buy the mansion. All he has to do is remodel it. So anyway, when you start to get outside the box and you put your entrepreneurial hat on, there's a lot of opportunities, not just in the United States, but everywhere, even if you don't have a lot of money to start with. That's the great thing. So I'm not sure if that was your question, Keanu, but But there you go. All right. Hopefully you can clarify in the chat deal. Jacob, thank you for the super chat. George, can you give quick explanation of how you decide if a company is cheap or expensive? The metrics you think are most important to look at? Well, I like to focus right now on commodities because I think as a group, they're cheap. And so how am I coming to that conclusion? If you look at a chart of commodity prices compared to the S&P, the differential, the delta is at an all-time high. So compared to the S&P, commodities are as cheap as they ever have been. So I like to start there. And then with the commodities themselves, it's pretty easy. Just look at a chart, a historic chart adjusted for inflation. And then you say, well, I can't really buy soybeans or I can't really buy oil. Okay, well, then just look at a company that produces it that you think is directly correlated. And then just run the numbers on the company. Just look at the balance sheet. Just look at the P&L and see if, look at the PE ratio and determine if you think this company is cheap. Is it going bust? Is the price just dropped because the commodities themselves are in a bear market, but the company itself, you know, not a lot of debt on the balance sheet, got decent cash flow, definitely will survive, and it'll definitely make it into the next bull market. That's where I start. And as far as company specific, I just like to pay 50 cents for a dollar. So I'm not a big growth guy. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's just, I don't think I'll ever be good enough or smart enough to be able to play that game because it's a complicated game. I just like, listen, if you said to me, George, you could make 30% returns if you just focus on trying to predict growth of companies, or you could have a 15 or 20% return just focusing on value and buying things cheap right now, I'm going to take the 15, 20% all day long because I know that's within my wheelhouse. And I know there's an 80% probability that I'm successful with the 15, 20, and there's a 10% probability that I'm successful with the 30% chasing growth. And so I'm just looking at, Wells Fargo as an example. You look at, and I didn't buy them back in March. I'm going to be very specific. I bought them, and I didn't buy a lot. I bought a little bit, maybe it was in April, something like that. When the price got extremely low, I was fortunate enough to go in there and buy a little. Why? Because it's just cheap. I mean, they're trading like a 7 PE, and the dividend got up to 8 or 9%. I mean, for Wells Fargo, then you look at their balance sheet. And yes, I understand. I understand the bearish argument. I totally get it. George, why would you do that? Wells Fargo has a big commercial real estate book and the Cerveza sickness. They're going to be down for the next 2 years. Yeah, I get it. I totally understand that. But and personally, I thought the stock was going down even further. I mean, that's the main takeaway, I think, from this question is I buy things even if I think they're going to go down. Like, how many people do that? I could be bearish on a stock and still buy it. I could be bearish on the whole entire market and still buy a specific stock. So people say, why, George, why would you buy something if you think the price is going to go down? Because I don't think about the price, or I don't think about the price going up or down, right? That's not where I start. I start with just asking myself if it's cheap. And if it's cheap, I buy it. If it's expensive, I sell it. So anyway, going back to make sure. That's how I pretty much look at it. It's not a real technical way of doing things, Jacob. And that said, I only buy stocks. Like, I'd have to look at what I have. But I mean, I've bought since 2012, I've actually gone out and purchased stocks maybe like three times, maybe. And how of all the stocks I've bought since 2012, how many have I sold? Zero. Goose egg, because they're not expensive yet. They're just, they are, they go up and down and up and down. Cool. I just hang on to them until they're expensive. So that's kind of how I look at it. It's not rocket science. I just like to take the KISS method, right? You keep it simple, stupid. So anyway, I'm sure Lynn and Chris have a lot more insights to it. But that's just it. And it's just the same way that I used to analyze businesses. When someone would pitch me a business and I'd consider buying it, it's just the same thing. I wouldn't ask what's the market price. I wouldn't ask, well, this Circle K here. Well, is the price going to go up or down in the future? Who cares? You're buying a Circle K. You're not concerned with the price going up in 5 years. The only thing you're concerned with, if you're taking your own money and spending that 500 grand or whatever to buy that Circle K or that McDonald's franchise, you don't care what the market price is going to be in 3 years. You just care about the financials. You just care about the P&L first and foremost. And then you're carrying, you know, the balance sheet to make sure they don't have a lot of debt. But assuming they don't have a lot of debt, then you're just like, okay, what's their cash flow? What's their positive? What's their profit? In other words, okay, great. Well, how much debt do I have to take on to buy the business? What's my cost of the debt? How much does it cost me to service it? Okay. How much money out of pocket do I have? Okay. Where can I have some efficiencies? Great. Cool. What's my return compared to what I can get elsewhere? Sounds good. Let's do it. You're asking $1 million for this McDonald's franchise. I'll give you $750. And you try to work them down, right? You try to get 50 cents for a dollar. That's the world I come from. So to come into a stock world where everyone's focused on where the price is going to be in 2 years, it's like a foreign concept to me, because I would never, ever buy a business that way. And then people say, well, yeah, but this is stocks. Yeah, but what are stocks? You're buying a piece of a business. You got to remember that. So anyway.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Andres, thank you for the super chat. George, what will happen to U.S. commodity stocks if dollar goes down? Will stock? Yeah, most likely. Most likely. Because you're talking about consumer price inflation. You're talking about, not necessarily. Let me think here. What do you mean by this, the dollar going down, Andres? That's a very broad question from the standpoint of, are you talking about the dollar going down compared to the euro? You talk about the dollar going down on the DXY? Are you talking about the dollar going down relative to U.S. assets? Are you talking about the dollar going down relative to the goods and services you buy on a daily basis? I would assume you're talking about compared to the CPI inflation. So just to be clear, you can have CPI inflation and still have the dollar appreciate, right? You can have the dollar can appreciate on the DXY. It can go to, say it's at 97, 98 right now. It can go to 110, go to 120, while at the same time, consumer price inflation in the United States is going up. Most people just see it as just kind of like a binary or like a big monolith, like inflation is just this big thing. And if the dollar goes down, then prices go up. And if prices go down, then, the dollar goes up. And it doesn't work that way. It's a nuanced question. But anyway, I'll assume that you're talking about inflation, CPI. And in which case, yes, that would have the tendency of moving those commodities up in price because most of them are denominated in dollars. Okay, next question. JS, thank you for the super chat. Currently reading The Stock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, which basically outlines Milton Friedman's philosophy of creating utter chaos to push agendas. Not just Friedman. Yeah, that's what Warner was talking about with the BOJ and the Princes of the Yen. She would be an excellent interview. Yeah, I'll check it out. I got a ton of people on the list right now that I'd love to interview. So I'll definitely add her to the list. Thank you. Abby, thank you for the super chat. How can I pay yourself or Lynn to spend 20 minutes looking at my stock portfolio and give me some tips? I don't do that. I don't know that Lynn does that. But Abby, you should be doing that. You should be doing that on your own. I think, even if you're not in the Rebel Capitalist Pro community right now, even if you're just watching my videos or watching the live streams or just watching YouTube videos with Lynn and Chris or myself, I would encourage you to, and I know you're doing this because I see you in the chats all the time. So I know you're doing this, but try to continue to expand not only your level of education, but your confidence in yourself. And because I think that the more you're able to do that, the more successful you're going to be long-term. If you always have to rely on someone else to for confirmation, I don't know that I'm not saying you won't be successful. I'm sure you will be, but I think you'll be even more successful if you're able to think from a standpoint of being just completely independent, like 100% independent. That's what I'd encourage you to kind of go that direction. But I understand what you're doing. So, I don't do that, and I don't think you'd want me to do that either. I don't know I'm your guy to analyze a stock portfolio. I think that would be a Lynn or Chris for sure. I'm not sure they do that. But if you're a part of the community, Abby, I can't remember if I've seen you in there or not. But even if you're not, I'm going to be interviewing Chris and Lynn periodically. And just get in there and, well, how would you do that? Or Lynn, you can probably just send her an email. That's what I'd do, Abby. I just go to Lynn's website and send her an email and ask her if she does that. And then, if she does, I'm sure she'll respond. Okay, next question. Why does Lynn's portfolio? I don't know. You got to ask Lynn. I know she's dollar bearish too. You definitely think she'd have some oil. I have no idea. I'll have to talk to her about that when we get her on the live stream with Rebel Capitalist Pro, but I have no idea. Okay, next question. David, thank you for the super chat. Love Medellin, was there for 10 days. Oh, very cool. Now all's I want to do is live there. Yeah, David, every single person that comes down here that I know, they always say the same thing. Exact same thing. No matter how apprehensive they are about safety or any of those things coming down here initially, once they get here and they're here for a couple days, every single one of them wants to come back and retire here, and including my mom. So right now you're in Tucson. Okay, I know Tucson well. Is possible we aren't in a bubble? How to adjust 2010 prices? Do you compound the... Probably you're asking if you compound the inflation rate. So is it possible we're not in a bubble? I'm not sure if you're talking about real estate, if you're talking about the stock market. The short answer is no, because I see where you're going with this, David. I think you've watched a couple of my videos where I've talked about if the inflation rate is a lot higher, like most of us would assume, than what the CPI is telling us over the past 20 years, then adjusted for inflation, home prices and stock prices would be a lot lower. But you also have to look at real wages, right? You're just looking at one side of the coin. So if it is true that housing prices would be a lot lower adjusted for inflation, then we would assume if inflation over the last 20 years has been a lot higher than the CPI would lead us to believe, then you've got to say, okay, great, home prices are lower. But if you look at average wages, real wages, adjusted for inflation, and if you look at GDP, adjusted for the same rate of inflation you're layering over the stock market or the housing market, we're in a depression. We're in a depression, meaning GDP, real GDP is going down, flat at best, and real incomes are going down. So if you've got home prices going down at the same rate or as real income and real wages, then that doesn't mean that it's necessarily, we're not in a bubble. Or how should, I shouldn't say that. It doesn't necessarily mean that things are cheap, right? You've got to look at the inflation adjusted chart. That's right. But you also have to look at incomes, because at the end of the day, people are buying the house with income. And so if real wages have gone down at a faster rate than housing prices, then I don't know if they would still be, I would still consider them cheap. I might consider them cheap, but I don't know if I'd pull the trigger. I think that's probably the best way of saying it. So yes, we could possibly not be in a bubble, but and home prices, as an example, could be cheap adjusted for inflation, but it doesn't necessarily mean I'd pull the trigger, because if home prices are cheap, then that means that real wages and GDP is absolutely horrible and our trend is lower. Okay, next question. Rohan, thank you for the super chat. Hi, George. Do you think non-sovereign crypto is going to perform in the wake of CBDCs? Central bank digital currency is, I'm assuming, what you're talking about. There's a couple arguments there, Rohan. Number one is the obvious, that if you've got a non-sovereign crypto, they're just, the sovereign government's just going to ban it. In which case you could say, yeah, that doesn't matter because it's decentralized. And that's true, but so is heroin, right? So people that say, yeah, but they can't find out about Bitcoin because it's anonymous, it's decentralized. Again, my heroin analogy is, if the government makes it illegal, although you can transact and maybe not get caught, how many people are actually going to do that if they do get caught and they've got like a 10-year prison sentence that they're facing? Probably not a lot of people. You're going to have some people for sure, but the majority of the people, I don't think they're going to do it. Even if they can do it, just because they're like, no, I'm not risking 10 years in prison. So that's one side of the argument. The other side is, the central banks will start to gravitate toward the sovereign crypto because the price is going up and they see it as a way to lower their sovereign debt. And this Simon Dixon talked about this in our interview, and I thought that was a very interesting take. So let's say a sovereign is, they have a debt problem. And they say, okay, well, Bitcoin, we see it appreciating, and we see it appreciating substantially over the next 5 years because it's getting mass adoption. So why should we push this Fed coin when we can buy Bitcoin and hold that just like we hold gold? And then if it appreciates enough, then that can bail us out of this pension fund problem we have, or this sovereign debt problem we have, without us having to sell more debt. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm saying it's an interesting hypothesis. So those are the two sides, and you've got to come to your own conclusion on what do you think is most likely. But I think most likely, unfortunately, would be the governments will try to ban it because they see it as a competitor, and governments don't like competition. And when you look at how much control having a central bank digital currency or a Fed coin or my buddy Eric Townsend with Macro Voices calls it the Orwell, which I think is a very appropriate title. It just gives the government so much power, and just way more power than it has right now. And I just don't see politicians, once they get it, I don't see them just saying, oh, we could have all that power, but nah, we're not going to do it because we just want to be good stewards of the Constitution, or we want to be good public servants. That's not, politicians are the bottom of the barrel, guys. I don't care who they are, right, left, middle. They're all just, they're all power hungry, and they're not of good character, or else they wouldn't be politicians in the first place. Because think about what it takes to be successful as a politician. You have to have zero moral compass, none. You have to have no ethics. You have to have no principles, zero. You have to be willing to say whatever you think you need to say in order to get votes. You have to be willing to lie. It's just, you can't have a strong moral character. Now, there are outliers. I would say Dr. Paul is a total anomaly. But as a group, you're just dealing with the dregs of our society from a standpoint of ethics and morals. So my point is, I can't see them seeing all this power sitting over there in the corner and not wanting to go take advantage of it. Okay, next question. Marvin, thank you for the super chat. Thank you, George. Tinfoil hat question. Yes, very cool. Are we in battle royal with FM capitalism? Communist socialism and globalism, with the U.S. using Fed as an economic weapon. Are we in FM? I'm not sure. FM, Marvin, are you talking about, let's see, are we battle royal with, oh, free market capitalism. That's what you're saying. Okay. Are we in a battle of free market? Well, Marvin, where do we have free market capitalism? That's where I'd start. Definitely not in the United States. I mean, it's not even close to free market capitalism. It's cronyism. I would say that once you get rid of all the racial components and all that stuff that fascism. But if you look at fascism from a standpoint of just what they believed economically, it's very similar to what we have in the United States. And again, I am not saying by any stretch that the United States is this racist nation, and I'm not playing that game. That's not a good use of my mental bandwidth. I don't think it's a good use of your mental bandwidth at all. But I am saying if you at least look at Germany and whatnot, they had a private sector, but the government was really pulling the strings. And so just from a strictly economic standpoint, how is that different than what we have in the United States? Right? So I don't think we have free market capitalism. There's a couple countries that come close, but it's still not exactly. But anyway, okay. So communism, socialism, globalism but Marvin, who's on the side of free market capitalism? Like, it's definitely not the government. It's definitely not the Fed. The Fed's doing. Are you kidding me? The Fed is buying junk bonds. The Fed is buying specific debt. First, they're buying ETFs, but now they're buying specific companies. They are literally picking winners and losers. How is that anything that resembles free market capitalism? Not even close. So I don't think we're really in a battle royale, because in order to have a battle royale, you need someone battling for free market capitalism. I don't. Who? All the developed countries are moving closer and closer to socialism. And again, people are going to say, no, it's you're not defining socialism correctly. Well, I'm defining it as the more and more you let's say, increase the welfare state, whether that's your corporate welfare or social welfare, you're increasing the government spending as a percentage of GDP. So at a certain point, you've got to ask yourself, if government spending is 90% of GDP, does that qualify as socialism? I would say so. And even if the government doesn't specifically own the means of production, where do you draw the line? Is it at 60%? Is it at 90%? I mean, it's got to be somewhere, because obviously if the government is 100% of GDP, that's got to be socialist. Sure isn't capitalism. So that's how I'd answer the question. I don't think that's tinfoil hat, not even close. But to be clear, no, that's my clear answer. No, I don't think we're in a battle royal for free market capitalism, socialism, and globalism, because I don't think anyone is battling for capitalism. I think everyone's just tag teaming socialism. they're on the same team, right? Okay. It's just, to what degree do they want more and more government spending, and therefore more and more, or taking us closer and closer to socialism? I mean, do you want that now? Do you want, you know, how much socialism do you actually want? I think that's the battle. Okay. Next question, please. Okay. Andrew, thank you for the super chat. Hey, G, let's pretend my bank is the central bank. Okay. How does it differ from banking with Chase? Oh, it's a big difference, man. What can I do differently now? Is my savings now considered to be reserves? Okay. Well, from a standpoint of the people that have the bank reserves, how would it differ? It's not going to differ a lot, but but what happens, Andrew, the entities that have the bank reserves, they're going to be in the financial system. Even the hedge funds don't have accounts with the Fed. They don't have reserve accounts. It's really just the primary dealer banks and the banks under the Fed's umbrella. So the question is more, how would a bank use the bank reserves? And it's a lot of it is just using it to add capacity to their balance sheet, to have more freedom and flexibility to loan, increase the M2 money supply, increase the deposits, buy financial assets like treasuries, to flip them to the Fed at a profit. It's really to be more in the financial economy. Now, you could say that the increase in bank reserves allows them to potentially loan more to the real economy, but it does theoretically, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to need a loan, because they still have to loan to someone who they think is going to pay them back. They even if they have the power, they, meaning the commercial banking system, to create money out of thin air, which they do by creating another loan, they still have to be paid back, because if they have too many loans that default, then the asset side of their balance sheet will shrink, while the liability side of their balance sheet stays the same. They're insolvent, meaning they're out of business, they're bust. So they still have to be cognizant of that. But as far as, I don't know that it would differ a lot. I mean, it's not like you could, no, you might be able, I was going to say, to pay your rent with bank reserves. You can't really pay your rent with bank reserves. But what would happen is, I'd really have to think that through. They might be able to take the bank reserves and transfer it to the bank of the entity they're paying rent to, and therefore that goes against the deposits, and they increase their deposits. That's really a Jeff Snyder question, because that gets down into the weeds. The thing that I focus on is the central bank's ability to increase M2 money supply by increasing bank reserves, because this is really the at the heart of your question. It's because you're trying to figure out inflation, you're trying to figure out how the Fed printing money applies to that. And I think this is a very interesting question, Andrew, but I think you also have to look at the bank reserves base, how bank reserves that the Fed prints can affect or not affect M2 money supply in the real economy and velocity. I did a tweet the other day, and I'm going to be talking about this in tomorrow's whiteboard video, where the Fed's quantitative easing really has the tendency to reduce velocity. Why? Because it's consolidating M2 money supply into fewer and fewer accounts. So you can see M2 money supply go up, while at the same time, velocity goes down, because the amount of money is being concentrated in fewer and fewer and fewer bank accounts, Well, if it's being concentrated into fewer and fewer bank accounts, obviously the velocity is going to go down because those people with billions or trillions of dollars aren't going to be spending all of that because where you're just going to invest it, right? Where if that $1 trillion, let's say, was spread out equally into every single person's bank account in the United States, the velocity would really pick up because you have most Americans out there would spend it immediately because they don't have more in their bank account. They don't have $1 billion in their account, right? Or that they have access to. So anyway, I don't want to get off on that tangent, but the most concise answer I can give you is it differs from the standpoint of who has the bank reserves. If like a hedge fund or if you yourself had an account with the Fed, you probably could use it as a normal account because to pay for things you would, but see, it's not like you have a debit card or a check. See, you don't have a check or anything. You'd have to have the Fed transfer the reserves to the reserve account of the bank of the entity you're trying to pay. And just, you'd have to be in the financial system. There's just no way to do it unless you were in the financial system. Unless you're, you can't really be a non-bank entity and work within the system like that. Although it's a really cool question. Yeah. But again, main thing is focus on the Fed creating reserves and how that can increase money supply, M2, and how it can increase or decrease velocity through the commercial banking system or through the federal government actually spending money into the economy that the Fed has to monetize by creating more bank reserves, because that increases M2 directly and that increases velocity. And if that's not clear, watch my whiteboard video tomorrow. I'll explain it. Alex, I'm American living in Southeast Asia. Very cool. Any unique opportunities you see in Southeast Asia? And what kind of business would you start if you only had 10 grand? Online. No brainer. Online. I mean, with 10 grand, that's like a fortune to start an online business. For sure. So Alex, how do you do that? First of all, start listening to my buddy, Miles Beckler. He gives out all his content for free. Just go to the Miles Beckler YouTube channel. And if you power through his content, you're going to know how to make money online and how to start a business. And it just depends on how you feel as though you can serve a community and what you're really interested in. So if you're interested in real estate, start creating content around real estate that serves a specific audience, and watch Miles Beckler. You'll see how to do it, and then at a certain point, you'll be able to turn that into a little business. That, especially if you're living in Southeast Asia, you should have no problem setting up one of these businesses and paying your bills. Or do an authority website, which is something that a lot of these online guys talk about, which is interesting, where what you're doing is you're let's say doing like 90 blog posts on a specific topic, let's say drones, right? And so you're doing all these awesome blog posts on drone racing or drones or virtual, you know, the goggles they wear to race the drones and stuff. And so then you're getting this Google traffic coming to your website, because then you're starting to review drones, right? And then at the bottom of the blog post or at the bottom of this review for this new drone, you've got an affiliate link, let's say to Amazon. They click on that, they buy that as a result of you producing that awesome content that Google is driving traffic to, then you get paid for that. And you don't have to have your own product. You don't have to have zero. The only thing you have to have is time, energy, ambition, and a passion for something. And you're on your, in a website, in a blog, and you're on your way. And you don't even need 10 grand for that. I mean, $500, $1,000, and you can do that easily. So So what I would do is I would take, let's say, $2,000, and I would allocate $500 per business, let's say, and I would start 4 or 5 of these online businesses, and I would just go all out. I would spend 12 hours a day just creating content, awesome content that really has a lot of value for those specific audiences, and then just see which one takes off and see which one you enjoy the most. And you throw stuff up against the wall and see what sticks. And if you got $10,000, you're only risking $2,000. If you do it 4 or 5 times, if you're ambitious enough, you're going to get a winner. And then you got something that's throwing off $3,000 or $4,000 a month US. And if you're living in Southeast Asia, you're good to go. You know what I'm talking about. You can live on that easy. In fact, you can just live on $2,000 a month and take the additional $2,000 and start investing, right? You can buy some gold. You might be able to invest in real estate if you save some money. And as far as specific opportunities I see in Southeast Asia, real estate is huge, 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 huge. I was actually listening to Andrew Henderson's podcast this morning from Nomad Capitalist, and he made a fantastic point that I'd never really thought of. He was talking about Cambodia in the sense that you have to be a Cambodian citizen to buy property there. But he said, listen, if you're like a digital nomad and you enjoy spending time in Cambodia, and you think Cambodia in 20, 30 years is going to be developed, and if you think they're going to open up the market to allow foreigners to buy real estate, which obviously increases demand, limited supply, increased prices, then it might be an interesting opportunity to go in and get your passport in Cambodia, which would allow you to buy real estate. You buy the real estate super cheap, and maybe you can cash flow it when you're there. I'm assuming you could, but then maybe that's kind of your long-term strategy. And while you wait, you're getting paid. You're getting paid 10%. You're getting paid 12%, something like that. That's how I'd go about it if I was in your position. I'd take the $10,000. I'd start 4 online businesses. I'd see which one worked. I'd go full bore on all of them. And then I'd just dive in 100% to the one that was really working well, the one I enjoyed the most. And then I'd try to live cheap. I'd take the excess money and I'd start to invest it. That's how I'd bang it out, man. All right. Next question. Kostas, thank you for the super chat. Judges on 4th July till 20th July. And then again on August 8th. Judges on, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking. Okay. You talk about the TGA, 1.6 trillion. Got it. Opinion on S&P 500 calls. No. I see what you're doing. Now, so what you're trying to do is you're trying to make a bet that Trump is going to drop the 1.6 before the election, and the stock market's going to boom as a result of that, just on a temporary sugar rush, because of you watched my video the other day. Thank you for watching my video, by the way, Kostas. But if you're doing this with gambling money that you don't care if you win or lose, okay. You could take a flyer and buy some calls and see if it pans out for you. That's not my game, because it's just like, you know, my mom lives in Vegas and I've spent a lot of time in Vegas, and I've spent a lot of time in casinos back in the day when I used to play blackjack, but I used to play blackjack to train my mind. I never played it to win money ever, just to train my mind. But going back to Vegas, you know, when I take my mom out to dinner and go take her to a show or whatever, you're always going through the casinos, or when I have friends in town that visit. And I never, ever, ever have the urge to gamble. Never. Why? In the long run, you're going to lose money. So that's not fun for me. Whenever I'm playing something where I have the probability of losing over the long run, I'm not into it. Now, I'm not saying you have the probability of losing right now, but if you just continue to gamble with that mindset, right, over 10, 20 years, it's just not a winning strategy, even if you've got a couple winners right off the bat. But if, I mean, if you're just doing it with gambling money, great. If you're doing it with a substantial portion of your portfolio, personally, I wouldn't do that. It just, or maybe you're trying to hedge. If you're trying to hedge, maybe a short position, that could be interesting. But now we're getting into some really pro stuff. That's like what Serezna, like Patrick Serezna or Eric Townsend, that's what those guys are doing. And unless you're an actual pro, I don't know if I'd suggest that. So anyway, but that's my opinion on calls, is it's a gamble. You might have the probabilities this time, but I wouldn't do it. It just, that's not the game I like to play personally. So that's my best answer, I think. Okay, next question. Marvin, thank you. I forgot the quotations around free market. Yeah, I appreciate all the insight. I've learned a ton from following. Cool, Marvin. Thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to actually watch the videos, the live streams, the interviews. I know that the most valuable real resource we have is time. Period. Far more valuable than money or anything else. And so if people are actually dedicating time, their most valuable resource, to watching a live stream or one of my videos, one of my interviews, I don't take that lightly. And it means a lot to me. And we all sincerely appreciate it. Sebastian, Thomas, Danny, Maria, Jean, even Kayla. Kayla's my housekeeper and the gal that does all my cooking and cleaning.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Paola, thank you for the super chat. Hi, George. I love your videos. I would like to know which is your success formula, strategy for business and or investing. I'm trying to think, Paola, of, because they're different. They're a lot different, but they have some common denominators. And I think that the first common denominator is you have to think independently, for sure. You have to have control over your emotions. You have to be able to leverage other people's skill set to make you more money. And that requires being honest with yourself, looking yourself in the mirror and saying, what are my strengths and weaknesses? And it sounds easy to do that, but actually it's not, because it requires that you completely release yourself from ego. And the people who I saw in business that had a big ego and they let that drive their decision-making process, they just couldn't set it aside. It was just always a part of every decision they made. They might have been successful short-term, long-term, never, ever. And I don't have as much experience investing as I do business, but I would assume that it's the exact same thing. You just can't have an ego. You've got to put that aside. So you look yourself in the mirror, say, what am I good at? What am I not good at? And then what you do is you try to analyze where you're deficient or what you might not have time for, because you're a parent, maybe. You got a life, you've got a job, you've got whatever. And then I'd say, okay, how can I find the very best people in the business and leverage their skill set to make me more money? So whether it's in business, it's your employees. So you've got to look for employees that are going to make you money, and you got to look for the people who are sharp and who complement your skill sets. And then you got to do the same thing in investing. And that's why, and I hate to throw in a plug there, but I will. That's why I set up Rebel Capitalist Pro, because I don't have time to sit there and do just epic amounts of research and all the research that I know is required. So I have an option. Either I can hire someone to do the research for me, to have another employee, or I can just basically hire Lynn and Chris or someone like that, right? And so then I thought, well, I sometimes I have time to read their whole report, but sometimes I don't. And if I don't have time to read their report, I wish I could just hop online to like a live stream and just ask them my questions or highlight specific things or hear their comments on their rationale as to why they are talking about this specific stock or why they're talking about commodities, why they're using this chart, why they're seeing the world, the macro world from this vantage point. Why is Chris bullish on the dollar? Why is Lynn bearish on the dollar? Right. And then not that I'm delegating my thinking to them. I'm just delegating that hardcore boots on the ground type of, you know, being in the trenches research that I don't have time for. And then I'm analyzing all the information that's coming to me. And I'm trying to focus on the forms of information that I like the best. And I like video personally. And then I'm trying to use that to make my own decisions, right? But it's still the same as business. It's still just understanding where your strengths and weaknesses are and leveraging people that are more talented than you in specific areas to make you more money. That's the bottom line. And that's a common denominator in business and in investing. So that's where I'd probably start there. You've got to be an independent thinker. You have to be able to release emotion from the equation. You can't be, you know, it doesn't, if you make $1 million, if you lose $1 million, you can't really get super, super excited and then super, super down. You got to try to have an even keel, or else you're not going to be able to problem solve. And that's the main key in business, is to be able to manage people and problem solve. So again, let me go over the three here, because I keep going off on a tangent. So you've got your ability to control your emotions, independent thinking, and being honest with yourself so you can find people who complement your skills and make more money off of their skill set. Okay. Next question, Sebastian. Roger, thank you for the super chat. Thoughts on single family REITs? I hope that's what you're talking about, Roger. Thoughts on single family REITs or multifamily REITs investing, given, do they have single family REITs? Given mortgage rates in the US, would you wait for real estate prices to react? If so, how long in specific areas? Roger, it's not the way I look at it. It's not the way I look at it. I got to start with what's cheap. Would I wait for real estate prices to come down? No, because see, what you're doing there is you're focusing on the direction of the price instead of just asking yourself about the underlying asset. Remember, it's going back to McDonald's. You're trying to figure out if the price of McDonald's franchise is going to be higher or lower in a year. And if it's going to be lower, maybe you hold off on buying the McDonald's franchise right now, because you might be able to buy it at a lower price in a year. It's not where I like to start, but let me try to answer this. In my own personal portfolio, I don't do REITs. I like to own single family more than I like to own multifamily, because I like the liquidity of the single family. It's going to take you longer to find a buyer for multifamily most of the time, so you've got less liquidity. As far as current mortgage rates, that comes into my mind when I'm the buyer, because I'm using the mortgage, the fixed rate mortgage, to short the dollar. But if you're buying that through the REIT, you're really not taking advantage of the benefit of having a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. And I can almost promise you the REIT isn't going to be able to get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. So I don't really, that really wouldn't be a part of my decision-making process, because what you're doing is you're thinking, okay, since mortgage rates are low, if they're going to go lower, if we're going to get negative mortgage rates, then how is the single family REIT going to benefit from that? How is the multifamily REIT going to benefit that? And therefore, how are the prices of their stock going to go up or down because of these headwinds or tailwinds that they may or may not have in the future? That's your question. And you're trying to guess what the future is going to be. And now, that said, if you can get a single family REIT that's paying a 12% dividend or a 10% dividend, and that cash flow is cheap, and you look at what they own, and they're owning all of these assets in linear markets, then that might be interesting. And you say, George, but yeah, you're coming to the exact same conclusion. So what difference does it make? Because you're just starting from the right place, right? You're starting from a point of mental origin that's polar opposite from which direction the price is going to go. And again, going back to blackjack, if you have that mindset over the long run, I just think you'll do better. As far as areas, you know, I like the linear markets for sure. I'm going to like the linear markets, whether it's single family or multifamily. But I don't really like REITs because you don't have control over the asset. If you're going to play the real estate game, just buy a single family house and rent it out and hire a property manager. You got to figure that if you're getting a 10% return from a single family REIT or a multifamily REIT, you'd be getting a 15% return if you own the underlying asset yourself, because you're going to have management fees. You're going to have all this money going out the window to all these other people. And you say, yeah, George, but I don't have any headaches. Well, hire a decent property manager. And plus, you're not going to be able to get the benefit of a 30-year fixed rate mortgage and get paid to short the dollar. And right now, I think that's the biggest benefit to real estate. It's like Hartman says, Jason Hartman, he says, my goodness, if I could get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage and the cash flow without having to own the real estate, that would be the best investment in the whole entire world. But see, with the REIT, you're taking away one of those big benefits. So those are I know I didn't answer your question and give you a definitive one way or the other, Roger, but I think those are my thoughts. And hopefully that helped. Okay, next question. Rohan. Hi, George. Wondering what you think about Australia specifically. Is it more likely to be inflationary compared to the US because we don't have the reserve? Yeah. I think that's a good point, Rohan. And plus, with as much of your economy centralized around one thing, I mean, you guys have built an economy, unfortunately, that is now a one-trick pony, and that's real estate. I mean, you know that as well as I do. Mining and real estate. But mostly, you know, if real estate goes down, you guys are toast. So what's going to be the release valve? Well, they'll have to print money. And if they have to print money and they don't have the reserve currency, that's going to be bad news for the Aussie dollar for sure. So and if bad news for the Aussie dollar, then looking at the domestic currency, it wouldn't have to happen if the Aussie dollar went down against the USD, as an example, but it would most likely, especially because you're not the world reserve currency, it most likely would increase consumer prices, which are already extremely high right there. And most likely with your government, they're just going to keep increasing minimum wage higher and higher and higher. I think you guys have the highest or one of the highest minimum wages in the world. So what that means is it's going to put even further pressure on prices if you go into a recession. And I'm not talking about because from the standpoint directly of wages, although that's a huge factor, but more so from a standpoint of supply. Because if you've got these extremely high wages that are sticky, that can't come down at all, and you take that throughout the supply chain, if you didn't have this minimum wage, suppliers producing goods and services, when they went into a recession and overall prices were coming down, they could lower wages at the same time. But now they can't. So if you're at a $20 an hour minimum wage, and where before the supply and goods of services in a recession or depression would gradually shrink, now it's going to collapse because those businesses can't lower their payroll, which is probably a majority of their expenditures. And therefore, the only choice they have is to go bust. They don't have a choice to lower their prices. So, and which is inflationary. So yeah, I'm just reading your question to make sure I answered it as thoroughly as I can. That my short answer would be yes. I would definitely, is it more likely? In my opinion, yes. Got it. I keep going through there to make sure that I read every single word to make sure I'm not missing something. So, okay, next question. Nicholas, hi, George. Can you think of a scenario where the U.S. avoids a dollar collapse, both long-term, short? Short-term, sure. For sure. Yeah, there's no guarantee that the dollar is going to collapse short-term. I mean, you could have demand going down. You could have people taking all their stimulus checks and they're paying down debt, which would reduce M2 money supply. That could be a tailwind for the dollar, even domestically. You could have the milkshake theory play out, where you have all this demand outside the United States for dollars because of all the dollar-denominated debt, the 13-plus trillion. And they might not be able to sell their assets, like Lynn would argue. And therefore, you see a big spike in the dollar on the DXY up to 110, 120. And when I say DXY, I'm just talking about that. That's a measurement of the dollar compared to a basket of other currencies, mostly the euro. So short term, I mean, I'm talking about like year, 2-3 years. Definitely, the dollar does not have to collapse at all. No way. Now it could, but now long term is much easier to predict. And that's why I like to invest long term, because the short term, who knows? But long term, you can invest with much more precision and be right far more often. And then you ask yourself, well, why don't the pros do that? Because the pros have to answer to their investors and they have to be fully committed every single month. They got a monthly P&L. But that's one huge advantage the amateurs like us that we have is we don't have to answer to investors. We don't have to have a monthly P&L. We can invest. We can be in 100% cash. We can do what we think is right. And we can invest for the 10-year, for the 15-year, where the pros can't do that. So 10-year plus, do I see a dollar collapse? It depends on how you define dollar collapse. If you define it going down 50% in value from where it is today. Yep. I totally see that happening. It's not certain at all, but I think the probabilities would suggest that over the next 10 years or 10 years plus, will the dollar be worth half of what it is? For sure. And that's on both sides. So when I'm talking about be worth half compared to what? Well, it's going to be worth half compared to on the DXY, in my opinion. Maybe not on the DXY, because you could have all the fiat currencies going down at one time. I think I would be far more confident in saying it will go down in terms of stuff, goods and services. It'll be down by 50%. And in terms of hard assets, it'll be down by 50%. Commodities down 50% for sure. No, I shouldn't say for sure, but I'm saying that in my opinion, that's my base case. That's what I think is most probable. But could it be flat against the euro, the yen? Sure. Because all those could come down at the same rate, if not a faster rate. So just to be clear, I'm saying long term against goods and services and hard assets, I see the dollar, quote unquote, collapsing, if you want to call it that. Compared to other fiat currencies, who knows? They're all terrible. All right. Next question. Aaron, thank you for the super chat. Can you elaborate on debts do not always have to be paid back? Interview with Jesse Felder. It looks like Jesse and Brent have different views on the dollar milkshake theory. Can you comment? Well, they do. I mean, they have the exact same views on the fundamentals. They just think that we're going to have a different... Jesse just thinks the government is going to print enough to devalue the dollar, and Brent doesn't think they're going to be able to. So that's pretty much the line in the sand. As far as Can you elaborate on debts do not always have to be paid back? I'm not sure what, I'd have to go back to my interview to know exactly what Jesse was referring to, but debts don't always have to be paid back. You can roll over the debt. So if let's just say that you are making $100,000 a year right now, and let's say you have $20,000 in debt and your monthly payments are $200. Well, you don't technically ever have to pay that debt off. You can just, I mean, you're going against the principal, but even if you had interest only, as an example, you could just keep it there and just pay the interest, and it's not really going to affect you too much if you're making $100,000 a year. The problem is if the debt gets higher and higher and higher and higher and higher, and the payments become a larger and larger and larger percentage of the income. And then you get to a point where you got problems, where you can't even make the interest payments, and you're bust. You have to default, or from a standpoint of the government, you have to just inflate your way out of it. So I think, without knowing exactly what Jesse was referring to, because I can't remember. I mean, I do a lot of interviews, so I apologize for not remembering exactly what he was talking about. But I think that's the best way that I can answer the question. Well, Jesse's asking more thoughts about the TGA growing again. I think that they're going to use that as a, just to try to goose the economy going into the election. And even if the Fed pulls back or starts to do QT, which I can't imagine they will, but maybe they would, then the Trump or the administration says, you know, fine, pal, go do what you want to do. We've got $1.6 trillion here, and we're going to do our own round of QE. So I know that's kind of a tinfoil hat thing, but if you kind of think it through, you're like, well, why wouldn't they do that? The only reason they wouldn't do that is if they're actually moral and ethical. And we know that no politician or no administration falls into that category. So why wouldn't they do it? If their only objective was to win the election, that's the ace up the sleeve right there. Okay. Let's see. Arthur, how can I pay more for your pro? Come on. Arthur, thank you very much for the kind words. It sounds like you're already a member. And that's actually what I'm gonna do this afternoon after my jog, is I'm gonna head into the forum and go back and forth with some members. But thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think we're fairly priced. We got tremendous value for money. So I'm really proud of the fact that we can offer the service for such a low price. So, okay. Calvin is asking, why do physical precious metal dealers sell prices for gold, silver over spot, but take in gold, silver for spot? Well, they're still making a spread there, Calvin, if I'm reading your question right. Why do physical precious metal dealers sell prices over spot? Right, but then buy for spot. Yeah, they got a small spread. Why would you ever want to sell your physical to a dealer? Well, I mean, if they're giving you spot, I'm not sure I understand your question, Calvin, because if they're giving you spot, I'm not sure what the downside is there. Okay. Yeah, I don't know what your downside would be. I think that's a decent deal if you're able to sell them at the going rate. Martin asks, would you expect a small decline in the stock market prior to the sugar rush? Again, let's be clear, guys. I might expect a decline in the stock market, but that doesn't mean I'm going to let that factor into my decision-making process for my portfolio. Okay. So do I see a small? Probably. I think we'll probably get a second wave of the cerveza sickness. And I think that's kind of the market's offsides, to use a Luke Groman term there. I don't think they're expecting that. And whether the cerveza sickness is real or fake, or the bottom line is it affects human behavior. And if it affects human behavior the way I think it will, I think you could see a decline there. Maybe not. I mean, I think it depends on the government put now, right? I think the Fed put might be expired, but now we might have a government put, And at what time is the administration going to release the sugar rush? And who knows, maybe they're going to increase it, which might make the market have a tendency to go down if the Fed isn't as accommodative. But if I had to say the probabilities, yeah, I think probably the market, I mean, it's, we're at nosebleed levels right now compared to the fundamentals. So I would see it going down and then potentially going back up with the sugar rush, which unfortunately is just going to bring more of the Dave Portnoy's and the Robin Hoods into the market. So it goes back to what I always say. I think, and obviously I don't have any evidence for this, but just my opinion is the market does what it needs to do to inflict the maximum amount of pain on the retail investor. And I think that this would just be a perfect setup for the market to go down again. And all of a sudden, we all suffer from recency bias. So think about all those people that didn't get in March when the market went down, and fresh in their mind is this rapid recovery. So if they see the market go down again to those levels, what do you think is going to happen? My goodness, you're going to see a flood back into the market, and it goes up bit, and then sputters out and then goes back down to all-time lows, and it crushes all the people that got in, and the Robin Hoods that have got, and Dave Portnoy's that have got in over the last month or so, and it just takes everyone down with it. Maybe it even happens three times. Maybe it goes down and then comes back up again. And then after the sugar rush, it comes down again to where now everyone and their grandmother is buying stocks because they just saw the last 9 months, the stock market dip down, go back up, dip down, go back up. So now everybody's buying the dip. Everybody. They buy the dip and the dip turns into the Grand Canyon. I think at some point in time, and I'm not here to make specific predictions, but I think some point in time, whether it's this year, 3 years, I think that's your kind of your end game. Is it just, it's the market just sucks every last person it possibly can into the long side before it goes down and then just crushes everybody. Opportunistic business model. Thoughts on long-term oil prices. Yeah, I mean, long-term, I'm a bull. I did that chart the other day where pretty much if you go back through history, when the prices get below $30 a barrel, they're cheap. And when prices get above $80 a barrel, they're cheap. So I think over the next 10 years at some point in time, we'll probably be over $80 a barrel again. And if we do, then I'm a seller. And if we go back under 30 or under 20 again, I'm a buyer. And until they hit one of those numbers, I just do nothing. But I think over the next 10 years, at some point in time, oil will get to 80 at least. I'm not sure how to pronounce this gentleman's name. Is it high? It's H-A-I. Thank you for the question, my friend. What is your opinion on crypto? I don't know a lot about crypto other than Bitcoin and just Ethereum and Ripple. You know, it's kind of the basics. I like Bitcoin as a speculation. Now, earlier in the live stream, I talked about how I think if it gets popular enough or the government comes along, they're going to do their own Orwell or Fedcoin. They might ban Bitcoin, but they might not. And I think that the asymmetry is attractive enough for it to be something that I want to add in the speculative portion of my portfolio. That said, personally, I'm not going to allocate 10, 20, 30, 50%. There's no way I would do that. But for a small portion of the speculative side of my portfolio, I think Bitcoin makes a lot of sense because of the asymmetry. As far as the small ones, I don't really want to play in that game because it's just way too speculative. And to me, that's just gambling. Zinterus says, George, don't you think the stock market could be booming because of the price of dollar inflation, the dollar is going down? Yeah, that we talked about that earlier. And it might, the pricing of the dollar inflation and will not go down again. Possibly, but but that's, again, I like to look at that as just a thought experiment to have a fun opinion on. I'm not going to make a bet. I'm not going to make an investment based on that. There's no way. So I could think about, I'd do a whiteboard video on it. I like to talk about it. I like to think it through. I like to have an opinion on it, but I would never sit there and say, I think the stock markets in nominal terms isn't going to go down again because of inflation, money printing. Therefore, I'm going to go long the S&P 500. No way, because it's expensive. And to me, that's gambling. Okay. Felipe, what is he talking about? Druckenmiller. Druckenmiller and Johnson only disagree on the SPX trend fundamentals, but not on the strength of the dollar. Only disagree. Do they disagree on the fundamentals or do they disagree on the dollar? I think they might disagree on the dollar, Felipe, or the trend fundamentals. Maybe you're talking about from a technical standpoint. I'd be surprised if both Druckenmiller and Brent disagree on the actual fundamentals of the market right now. And again, to be clear, just because Brent thinks the market's going up, it doesn't mean that he's bullish on the fundamentals. He's just bullish on dollar safety flight. Therefore, just what do? You want to be in dollars. You got to buy the market because you're worried about local inflation. You're worried about all these things. So you're going to go into bonds or you're going to go into the stock market. So that's why Brent's bullish the market. He's not bullish the market because of he thinks the fundamentals are fantastic. That's for sure. The world is going, Dan says the world is going through a transition from oil to electrons. Maybe, but I'd ask the question, what does that, if we transfer from oil to electrons, what does that world look like? Is that, do we have more productivity? Do we have less productivity? What does that do to global GDP? There's a lot of unanswered questions there. It's not as easy as just kind of a tech question, like how do we source the energy and transfer it to the like vehicles as an example. That's a complicated question, and it doesn't just work if we get the technology. And then you've got to ask yourself, Dan, how does that work in a country like Colombia? How does it work in Africa? How does it work in developed economies potentially? And I think that would be great. But if you come to a country like Colombia and tell them, hey, guys, you need to go electric tomorrow, they're going to tell you you're crazy. There's no way they're going to do that because to them, they've got different priorities. Not that it's right, wrong. I'm not here to judge those priorities, but their priorities are bringing people up out of poverty with the cheapest form of energy possible. And right now, that's not electrons. So now in the future, I hope it is. I think that would be fantastic because I like breathing clean air just like the next guy. But I definitely want to be realistic about it. I think saying the world, it's a much different statement to say the world is going through that transition compared to Europe is going through that transition or the United States is going through that transition. Okay, Super Traveler, how have your Medellin properties been doing? Any chance of a real estate video in the future? Yeah. In fact, I set up a separate YouTube channel to do that stuff, to do more of that type of content. We just haven't released it yet. So in the future, you'll definitely see more real estate vlogs, but it'll be on my new channel. So just be clear. I'm not saying that I'm going to change the George Gammon channel. That's going to be the same with the Rebel Capitalist show and the whiteboard videos. But I was thinking about doing some additional content that doesn't really fall into that macro category so much, like real estate and Medellin, and that'll be on the separate channel. I mean, how have they been doing? They're not really doing anything because we can't get the workers in there to finish the remodels because of the HOA. The government will let them in, but the HOA with the building isn't letting them in yet. So we're kind of in a standstill. We're in a holding pattern until they get done. And when they get done, we'll just have to make a decision whether we put them on the market or rent them out. But it's they're just kind of on pause, basically. Let's see here. Okay, it looks like I might be at the bottom. Yeah, I think I'm at the bottom there. Okay, cool. Well, guys, I appreciate it. Let me remind everyone, if you're interested in Rebel Capitalist Pro, just go check out. We've got kind of a sales page where I give you my best pitch on why you should become a member. And that's it, georgegammon.com/pro. Go check it out and see what you think. And if you think it could benefit you, by all means, sign up. I'd love to have you as a member and say hi in the forum. Our next live stream is with Lynn. She actually comes out with her newest research this evening. So that will be going on to the forum, the Rebel Capitalist Pro forum. And we will be discussing it with Lynn this Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. So 8 p.m. Eastern, if you're a member. So put that in your calendar. And just want to give some more shout outs here before I sign off, guys. Thank you for staying till the end. We've got Hoy. Hopefully I'm saying that right. We got Mr. Scott. We got Calvin. We've got Gerald. We've got Albert. Aaron. Who else do we have here? We've got Gigi Clips. We've got Jackson, Felipe, Just Me, Done Sailing. Hopefully you're not done sailing yet. I'd like to start sailing. EG Champagne, EJ Champagne, Derek, 555 Frontier, Alpinism. Cool. Marvin, Simplify. Yeah, that's a good one. Simplify. Senthil. Thank you very much for staying till the end. Micro Business Media. We'll give him a shout out. Wealthy Man. Andro, Rob, Taco Negro. Hey, it's good to see you again. Yeah, I see you. And you're always there till the end. I always give you the shout out. Very cool, man. Thanks for staying till the end once again. All right, guys, that'll do it for me. You guys have an awesome day, awesome weekend, and I will see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.